Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows through each month. Mondays features Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun discussion show on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Wednesdays feature none other than Selena Fox with her show, Circle of Nature. The second and fourth Fridays of each month features Songs of the Pagan Tribe, hosted by Kern Greenman. Less talk, more pagan music. Explore the songs, people, and the wonderful, inspiring world of pagan music. The third Friday of each month features Blue Marble, an eco-educational, eco-restorational, and eco-spirituality podcast that features activist adventures, stories about climate impacts with climate solutions, and how you can manifest good energy for the planet. Would you like to join with others in celebrating full moons? Then celebrate the next full moon online with Circle Sanctuary Community. The theme is Springtime Rising, and takes place on Monday, March 25th. Full moon circles begin at 7 p.m. Central Time, which is 8 Eastern, 6 Mountain, or 4 p.m. Pacific. Circle Sanctuary full moon circles include invocations, music, meditations, poetry, reflections, and ritual workings. They are facilitated by Circle Sanctuary ministers, Reverend Selena Fox and Reverend Judith Sizes, plus other members of the Circle Sanctuary community. Those joining online are invited to bring a candle to kindle during the ritual, and you're invited to interact with others in the chat on YouTube. Attendance is free and no registration is required. You want more information? Please go to circlesanctuary.org. It's March and spring is not far away. Would you like to nurture your love of plants or get gardening advice for flowers, herbs, vegetables, trees, and grow your most plentiful garden yet? Tonight on Circle Talk, we're going to be chatting with Monica Crossan on her new book, A Year in the Enchanted Garden. I have read her new book and it is wonderful, and I'm excited about talking with her about it. A Year in the Enchanted Garden features dozens of spells, charms, activities for both the new as well as the experienced pagan gardener. This hands-on book helps you select, grow, and harvest the best plants for your region and shows you how to use them in your magical practice. Monica lives in Concrete, Washington. She's a master gardener who has taught gardening through her local Washington State University Extension office for more than 25 years. She has been a practicing witch and educator for over 30 years and is a member of the Evergreen Coven. She is the magic of other books, like The Magical Family and her newest book, A Year in the Enchanted Garden, which we're going to chat about tonight. She's also a regular contributor to magazines such as Enchanting Living and Witchology. You can visit her at authormonicacrossan.com. Let's welcome her to Circle Talk. Welcome, Monica.
Thank you. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm starting to get spring fever. So your book was wonderful to start the season out. Tell me, is this your third book?
It is my third book, yes.
That is so great. So what inspired you to write? What took you from being a gardener to a witch to an author?
Well, I think I was, let's see, was I a witch first or was I an author first? As a child, I told stories and kind of lived in my head. I was raised in a Christian family, but always had this connection to the other world. In fact, and I told this story in one of my books that my parents actually took me to the doctor, and because I told them that I could talk to nature spirits. And,
Huh.
they were
That's
like,
funny.
oh no, she has a brain tumor. And so they took me in and they were actually told that I had an overactive imagination. But
That's funny.
I don't know. I think I was just always connected. But I always told stories. I started out going to college as a writer and ended up raising a family, becoming a master gardener. I homeschooled my children, and nature and gardening were always a huge part of that. And then as my children grew, I thought, you know what? It's time for me to start my career. And I started writing full time.
Oh,
So.
great. Great. Well, I loved your book, and I have several gardening books, and I have several pagan gardening books. And what was wonderful about your book, and I think we're going to talk about, because I think not only of someone who's a very seasoned gardener or practitioner could do, but someone who's new, is that you've broke it down into months. So it's really easy to see the month you're in or the month you want to do something and really look at what's kind of going on for that. Tell me, how did you come to that? Tell me about that.
Well, that's kind of just how I live. It's month to month, season to season, watching the sky, watching the earth, working with the cycles of the earth. And for me, also, just in my everyday life, I become overwhelmed when I look at the big picture of anything. So just taking it and cutting it up into sections, little bits of here's what we do in January, just makes it easier instead of just going over, hey, make this garden, do this, do that. And just to help people slow down and appreciate every season, every month for what it is. I mean, how many of us are like, well, my favorite time of the year is summer or fall
Right.
or this or that? It's just like appreciating every season, and how we live and interact with nature.
Absolutely. And again, I think a lot of people think, oh, I know what to do in the fall, or but even in the winter, I mean, your whole book are activities, both mundane gardening practical tips and also magical things that you can do every month of the years the wheel turns. So I thought that was very exciting.
Thank you.
So, and I'll, something else you did that I thought was very clever is that each chapter, each month it begins, you do a synopsis at the beginning, and I'm just going to go over March so our viewers get a taste of your thing. You start out with March. The maiden awakens slowly, alluring our senses with swollen buds and tendrils of green. Spring can't be soon enough. And then you've got March correspondences, nature spirits, nymph, colors, green, yellow, lavender, herbs, scents, apple, sandalwood, trees, animals, birds. You really do a really nice correspondence, and then you go into the month, and you do that for every month. And I thought that was really, really good.
I wanted to make it because it is, it's a pretty hefty little book, to also have like an area, because a lot of times that's what you need. Like I just need to go and find the correspondences and to have that available at the beginning of every month. So you can just quickly look at it. And at the end, there's also a quick kind of list of all the magical plants and their correspondences too. So you don't have to go,
Absolutely.
where's yarrow, where's, whatever, and find the pages
Absolutely. You
to
do
talk about.
herb magical properties in the appendix, which is really, really good. And you also do a good job doing the bibliography. So if people want more information on certain things, they can get it. So I thought that was really, really good. Well, an example, and again, what I liked about it is that my first thought when I read your book is, oh, I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the Sabbats. But the way you do the beginning and how you do things, it really gives people will ask me when I teach classes, I don't know what to put on my altar for the month. And so it really gives you ideas of colors and scents and stones and things. So someone could actually use your book as a guide to help them on a personal level set up their altar and maybe do things for the month.
Right. And that, as a young practitioner, was the kind of things that I always, kind of wish I had. And so, yeah, of course, just like we can look at the beginning of the each of the sections, there it all is, and then you can read on and get a little more in depth, like with the chosen herbs for the month or
Right.
different magical crafts, recipes, rituals
Absolutely. And
that are
you
added.
kind of have focuses for different months. Like March is something that I had not done and am thinking about teaching into a class. It was so interesting. Is talk to me about lunar planting.
Oh yeah, I actually my first experience with lunar planting was my grandfather, who I talk about a little bit in here, was actually a step grandfather, but he was from like Appalachia. So he had all these folk ways that really interested me. And when I was little, I remember him saying, talking about planting by the moon. So in my young head, it was like, well, how does he see out there? Because I thought he literally went outside at
Planted by
night
the
and
moon.
planted the light of the moon. But it's just a really great old way of planting using the influences, the pull of the moon, the astrological timing. You can do it very simply. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, and especially for us who are very busy this time of year, you just use that waxing to full moon time to plant things that fruit above ground, your annual flowers, things like that, because that's what the focus of the energy is. And then the last part of the moon, so you're looking at after the full moon to the dark moon, planting things that you're wanting to like work on the roots, like perennials, root crops, things like that. So it's literally that simple. And if you want to like work with the astrological signs, you just simply can think of earth signs and water signs as the time when you're going to do your major planting, and air signs, you're going to harvest, do things like that. And then your fire signs are when you're gonna weed and do things like that. And just remember that the moon goes through every sign
Right.
one month. So yeah, you can do either or, which is really, it's fun. And you don't have to do it for everything. Maybe just do it for your magical herbs or something like that, and just see how it feels to you. That's how I always say to start. Just a couple of little things.
Your book also does something that I find people asked for when I teach classes, is that you give examples of activities and rituals. And like, especially in March, which I look forward since the month we're in, and
Yeah.
you talk about making moon water.
Yes.
And then you give a blessing. Tell us about that, because that is something that's very easy. And I have found for people who are new practitioners that that is something that they can very easily do. And has it been an impact for their practice? Because so many people read books, but they don't take that step easily to actually doing things. And
Right,
making moon water
right.
is something that's very easy. So tell us about that.
Well, and actually, that's like, if anybody wants to talk to me about a magical practice, that's the first thing that I kind of steer them towards, because you can use it in so many things and it's super simple and it feels kind of cool, for new practitioners to kind of start out with. You can also do it with the sun, and you can do it with different phases of the moon, or however you want, and work it. You can use it in your practice. You can use it for cleansing. You can use it for I water my magical plants. I have specific plants that that I'm taking very good care of, and
Right.
that I water with them. So
That's a
yeah,
good idea. I
it's
had not thought of that.
yeah. It's a great way to bring a little moon magic into the garden,
So you make moon water. How long is it good for you?
I go through it pretty quickly. So I'll make a couple of, I don't know, a couple of gallons, something like that, probably once a month.
That's what I
So
thought.
yeah,
Most people say
so
until
like
the
I do
new,
2 gallons
whatever
during the
moon you
full
did
moon.
it at until the next moon comes.
Till the next moon comes, yes. So I'm making it monthly, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. But again, I'm like you. I think that it's really a good way to start and to get a feel. And then, like you say, there's so many things you can put it in. Bath, you can add drops of
Yeah.
it in your bath, and you can just do a lot of different things. So
Definitely.
and then it becomes, then it just becomes, again, I think I'm old, so I think there was a time when a lot of our magical practices centered only around ritual and big
Right.
celebrations. And now what I have found are people really, not that those things are important if you go that way, but people are really looking toward what can I do to bring this path into my everyday life.
Exactly. Right.
And I think your book is a great gift, someone to buy themselves, because I think your book is full of different ways that you can easily incorporate magic and in your path into your everyday life.
Yeah, and you can simply use color magic with flowers. I mean, things like that.
Just
So you
about
can
that. How
buy,
would you do that?
well, you can buy yourself, like if you're wanting some fire energy or something into your life for whatever reason, buy yourself a really cool pot of red tulips, just as simple as that. Put it somewhere and do your thing, however you want to incorporate it into your magic. So it's one thing about gardening and magic is like it doesn't have to be super expensive and these huge gardens with this and this and statuary. It can be a pot of herbs that or a pot of flowers. And also, I like to tell people just because this pot of flowers means something to me or I put it in a book, to me, it's all about how you feel connected with the plant and the intention. You're in what is that plant saying to you? Another thing that I try to express in the book is for people to get to know their region and their surroundings. So, you can also go out and make friends with that tree in your yard or in the park or whatever, and just get to know the spirits of your land. So
That's a
it
really
doesn't,
great,
yeah, it doesn't
yeah,
have
that's
to
a great
be.
idea.
Yeah.
It's funny. Years ago, I went to a festival, and the presenter was talking about that, we love nature and we get out in nature. And he said, "Can everyone name all the trees here?" He goes, "Can you all name any?" And I realized that we say we love nature, but we don't always take the time to
Right,
research
right.
and know
There was
exactly
like,
what it
what?
is. So I came home, and at least I can't identify probably all the plants, but I do know all the trees in my
Yeah.
yard, because it was something that I realized I didn't really know that. And so yeah, I do think it's important. So if what are some plants or what are some good things for March, as we're in the season of March? What are some good things to do for March?
Well, we are people in different regions are going to have different plants and things like
That's
that.
true.
I'm more about like March is all about new beginnings for me. So any of the
I think
bulbs,
in your
things
book
like
you
that.
call it the awakening, which I
Yeah,
liked.
I did. Yes, it very much is. Like a really cool thing to do is if you can get a hold of some like birch, the bark. Find a branch or something that's on the ground. Use the bark in incense for a simple ritual. Use the branches to make a tiny, I mean, it doesn't have to be an elaborate besom or anything. Just a little, tie it off, sweep away that negative energy, bring in the good, the whole spring cleaning thing. Like I said, any of your flowering bulbs, primrose, things like that are all just wonderful plants that are great for that awakening.
That's great. And it's funny, I have a friend who's going through changes in her life. If you
Yeah.
wanted to bring love or new relationships in your life, what type of plants or what would you suggest that she grow?
How are like grow some roses? Roses are just wonderful. And
Can you?
they
She lives
can.
in a condo. Can you grow
Oh,
roses
little
in a
potted.
pot?
Well, yeah. They have like miniature roses, things
Oh.
like that that you can grow in a pot. And they come in obviously a variety of colors, and just use that combination. I just did my own little kind of this little spring awakening spell with
Huh?
some self-love in mind with primrose. They have little heart-shaped petals, which are wonderful, and you can go buy a pot of those right now for less than $2.
Oh, that I will look for. Primrose. I will have to
Yeah.
get her some of those.
Yeah. And they're wonderful. They have a sweet smell. They're bright, happy, and I took a dying, it was more of a right at the verge of dying. So I took that petal off, and I took the each petal little heart shapes and put it around a candle for myself. And it's just
Oh,
like, be good to yourself. We're,
absolutely.
yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, something that I really enjoyed and I wanted you to talk more about because I don't know that people really understand the process is talk to us about tinctures.
Oh, those you're getting into the medicinal properties of
Absolutely. Tell my
herbs.
viewers what it is, and you do a really good job in your book about that. So tell us about that.
Well, there are different ways to use the medicinal properties of plants, and I always, if you don't know, I mean, start in your backyard, one, because most of us know dandelion or, some of these plants. And you're going to use the parts of the plants, and you're going to put them in alcohol, and that's going to leach out all the medicinal properties of that plant. And then you use a dropper, and you can so many drops a day, depending on what the plant is and the medicinal uses. I just did, oh,
I
a
didn't realize
bunch.
it was that simple because I think in
Yeah,
your
no,
book
it's
you
super
call it the
simple.
folk method.
Yeah, your
And
method is just like blah blah,
absolutely. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is really easy that you can do that. And you give a list of herbs and plants that you can utilize that with, which I thought was
Yes.
really good.
Yes, I actually have a friend who lives down the road from me, and she's the one that helps me. She's from Trillium Medicine, and she's amazing. Her name is Erin, and I had her come over to my house again recently to help, because I'm always learning more and more about that. And she's 40 years, in, and yeah, she's amazing. And we went out and we did some stuff in my yard. We went into the wild, and we did usnea, which is a type of lichen, and some other things that are native to our area. And I made up, did some hawthorn. Hawthorn, I love. That one's a really easy one for people. And that's one that I like to use in ritual as well, because it's good for the heart, and it's good for the heart. It just opens it up. And just a couple of drops of that, and it kind of opens you up to the spirits of nature and helps to kind of let them in. And so I use a lot of hawthorn.
Tell me what you use, and it's funny because I remember on the list because I am not a master gardener. I struggle, but and some of it's because I travel a lot in the summer because I'm not home, and plants like pets and children need care. But
Yeah.
I get very excited in the spring and will buy a lot of things, and I will buy lemon balm and have no idea
Oh.
what to do with it. And then I saw it was on your list that you can make a
Yeah.
tincture for, and I thought that's what I'm going to do because I love the smell of it. I love the plant, and I buy it every year, and then I don't really use it in cooking. I'm not sure what to do with it. So what can you use lemon balm tincture for?
Lemon balm is another one that is just great for anxiety and things like that. And it's another one. In fact, it's funny. Lemon balm is like, it's a mint, so it'll go crazy. Do not, like, at my house, I made the mistake of planting it just in there. It's everywhere. It's everywhere at my
Yes,
house.
it is very prolific, but it smells
It is.
so
But it,
wonderful.
you're right. It does. It's like, and
I
this
love
time
that
of
plant.
year, when it's coming up, like I was out weeding yesterday and I hit just my hands just brushed against a few of the small leaves that are coming up, and that scent that rose, oh my gosh, it was just like, I don't know, it's just happiness. But that's what lemon balm does. You know, it eases anxiety, it calms you down. And another great one to use, like in magic and stuff, just simply for that, you know, if nothing else, it's that plant that brings calm and peacefulness. And so I use it a lot. Making tea with it, drying it. It is a plant that you have to put in like a paper bag or dry in a dark place because the leaves will go black on you like pretty quickly. So, but it's great for that. Dream mixes, things like that.
Oh, that's really cool. And you know, so many people will buy rosemary and have that as an herb for cooking. And that again is another, it was on your list that I thought that's that and lavender. I believe you could do anything with lavender, but those are also readily available that a lot of people get for culinary purposes and don't really think about that would make really good magical tinctures.
They do. And rosemary, I don't know, there's something about the scent of it. To me, it just smells almost witchy. Like it's like, oh no, it smells like
It's
magic.
very strong. It's a very
It is
strong
very
scent. So,
strong.
yes.
The bummer, and I talk about this too in my book, micro regions. So these little microclimate, you know, where you're at, like
Yes, explain them.
literally.
Explain to everybody what that is.
So, I talk about the hardiness zones. So that those zones are, I'll say, hey, and you know, zone, this plant grows well in zones 8 through 10. Well, those are, you're getting into warmer zones where your frost dates are a little bit farther apart. So your frost dates are actually, yeah. So a hardiness zone is, you want to take a look at when your first and last frosts are in your region. So if you live in a colder zone, you're going to be maybe zone two. So you're going to, your first frost date might be August, your last one might be May. So yeah, those are. And so like I live in zone, it's considered zone eight, but I say because of my micro zone, I live in about 7B. So it's this weird cusp. So people literally, and that's just because I live in a narrow valley where there's bluffs on both sides. So I don't get the sun in the summer that a lot of people do. So that's going to change things up for me. I'm 10 degrees colder than people who live 5 miles down the road where they're getting, you know, some southern exposure, like a little bit at that time. So things like rosemary, if I don't bring it in, it's dead. Where people here in, I'm at my daughter's house in Congaree, she can grow it like a shrub right out
Yeah,
front.
that's what my daughter has, lavender and rosemary, like just shrubs. It's amazing.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm totally jealous. So I would love to have that. But yeah, that's the thing about growing herbs and stuff like that. Don't get discouraged because you just, if your friend 3 miles up the road is growing this wonderful variety of whatever, and you're not, it could just totally be because of where you're located, whether you're on a hill, near the water, in a wind zone, you know, it changes things up quickly.
That's interesting. So again, it's what you recommend in your book is going outside and observing, and like you say, look to see where the sun is, you know, and where it hits at mid at noon, and trying to figure things out.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's probably the most important thing. That, and just if you're a new gardener, start small. Just like you know where you get, you need to know where you're going to get 6 to 8 hours of sun. And, you know, for most plants, that way you won't be planting your lavender somewhere where you only get 4 hours of sun and you're like, why is it looking like this? And it dies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, other things, and you bring that up, other things like if you live, I used to have a lot of trees, and unfortunately, I had a storm several years ago that took out a huge tree. And I had like moss in my front yard. I mean, my yard was very heavily shaded, and it
Yeah,
changed the
totally.
whole environment of my front yard all this.
It's crazy. Just one incident like that, and then you have a whole new little micro climate there. And
Absolutely. So, yeah, your advice throughout the book is, it's great to read about it, but actually go out in your yard and look and see what's going on. How long, if you make a tincture, how long do they last? Do they last forever, or do you have a
Yeah,
time period?
they're pretty good for an indefinite. Just keep it in kind of a cool, dark place,
Right.
in a dark bottle. And
Okay.
yeah, with the and you know use like I used I use Everclear or just a really solid high proof vodka. Those work really well. If
Okay.
you stay away from alcohol, use a vegetable glycerin.
Okay.
That's gonna give it a shorter shelf life, so it's only good for about a year if you do that.
Okay.
You can
Okay.
also there's other ways to use herbs. You know, you can use olive oil, any kind of oil that you want, and you're gonna keep it in there for a few months. Shake your jar, keep it in a cool, dark place, and then that way you can make salves, and just different ointments. You can make an easy lip balm. You can make soap. These are really simple ways to use your herbs from your garden, and it doesn't it's you know doesn't take you know scales or anything like that if you use the folk methods. It's just a nice good handful, stick it in and fill it with oil
Right.
or alcohol.
And then you're again, you're using it. And then I have found when I do any type of magical practice or actually anything, you learn.
Oh
Then you
yeah.
learn what you like, what you don't like, what works for you may not work for
Definitely.
me or I don't like, and you just get a feel.
Oh,
So yeah, and
definitely.
again,
Definitely.
yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's exactly how I've
dabble a
done
little
it.
bit in it, and it's and I laugh. I say I don't know that I'm nature based as much as deck based because I have a tendency to live on my deck. But with that, I like potted plants and herbs. And for me, the most magical thing coming real soon will be hummingbirds. So
Oh,
hummingbirds
yes.
come by that. So that is very fun. So.
Well, one thing that and people, if you have your deck based or balcony based, porch based, whatever, you can plant, and people don't think about it, like native plants from your region, and pop them and place them on your deck. And then you are going to get more of your own the
Oh
wildlife
yeah, and
that
honoring the
is.
land spirits. That's a great idea.
And the other thing is that if you plant native, you're not your chances of failing are very low, because these are plants that have already adapted to your area. They
Right.
want to be there.
They know
So
the area.
totally. And if you do a little research, there are some wonderful, beautiful native plants for every region. So
Oh,
I
that's
always
great.
like that's an easy go-to. Also, just if you can in any garden, whether it's a balcony, a porch, a deck, whatever, try to add a little bit of something for, like you're talking about the hummingbirds, a little water feature, bird feeders, feed your hummingbirds, plants that they're attracted to, and bringing nature to you. I mean, that's a little, you know, the little frogs like the little water features, and to me, that's just a little bit
Fun.
of just that alone. Just
Yeah, it's fun, it's very calming, and again, I say as magical practitioners, 100 years ago we lived by the agricultural season because we had to grow our wheat, we had to mill it, we had to make bread. Well, I don't now. I just go to the store if I want bread. So sometimes you forget all the changes going on in Mother Earth. And so I think this is a really great way, which is another reason why I really loved your book. It helps get you back into that rhythmic nature of Earth that's really easy to get out of when you're so busy in day to day.
It's true. It's true. And I guess I'm old enough to remember, like, And being from this, I come from a agricultural roots, and I still remember my grandparents and their raspberry field, and just and my parent, my family were gleaners, and so we did, you know, we did haying in the in August, and we went to the pea fields in September, and so I have this connection with all of these old ways and watching them and doing them, and it's kind of sad to see it all disappear. And so if you can bring it back just in some small way, like even just visiting, you know, a local farm stand in the fall, or you know, just making ritual that kind of celebrates these ways of life.
Yes, I totally agree. So, yeah, and again, I think a lot of people get spring fever this time of year, and so it's just a really good. So besides, there's stores, there's a lot of herbs, there's a lot of new plants, there's a lot of variety that you may not have other times of year. So it's really, really fun to kind of look and see what's out there and see what you may. And like you said, you can, use any plant for a magical practice. You just have to do research and see if the plant talks to you and what it does. For example, a plant that other people may not use for certain things, but I do, is because honeysuckle. I have a really strong family connection to honeysuckle. It was all over my grandmother's home, and
Oh,
so
yes.
we used to pull out the thing and put the drop on her. And so honeysuckle means family for me. It takes me back,
Me
and
too.
it's just really funny. Other people won't. They're like, I don't use it for that. I'm like, but I've learned that's what it means to me. So don't you think you have to work with the plants and figure out your connection to the plants besides the traditional meanings?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And you said something about honeysuckle. I wrote about honeysuckle in this book, and it was a similar story of growing up with honeysuckle, getting a start from my mom and planting it at my own house. And you know, just watching it grow. Now it covers the front of it, and it's just that connection. And to me, it's protection and family, and it's just very, and I talk about also connection with plants and family, and talk about plant sharing and seed saving and things like that connection, because I think that's very important. And those familial ties, I don't know, I think it brings us closer to our ancestors and to our own past. And I very much feel the love of my grandparents just walking out into my yard or out the front door, the scent of the honeysuckle, things like that. It brings it back. And to me, it's a very, very strong connection that I treasure.
Yeah, and they say scent is one of the strongest senses that like connects you. So for me, smelling honeysuckle also takes me back to childhood. And it's just
Definitely.
really interesting. That so again, I have learned again, and your book talks about that, is working with plants and figuring out what's right for you and what images are
Well,
available.
any of our books are just guidelines. I think they're just starting points. And, you know, I try to give some good old-fashioned gardening advice and then some stories about how plants have incorporating gardening in my life has influenced my magic. And then it's like, now here, you go, you figure this out for yourself. Like, here's some lists of colors that, you know, may help with this kind of magic. But to me, that's what it's about. It's about your relationship with plants, your relationship with your region, and the spirits of place. And yeah, so I'm just stoked when I get people who write me and are like, oh my God, I just discovered this plant out in my field, and now, I'm doing this with it. In fact, I had a friend who came over, and she hadn't been in the area in a very long time. She had moved out, and we went down, and I took her to a favorite place because we have these their big leaf maples, and we're in one of the only areas where they get as big as they do. And watching her reaction to this tree welcome her home, like, brought tears to my
That's
eyes.
fun.
It was beautiful. And she was just, hugging it, and she was crying, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
That's really, really cool. So, something you talk about in your book that I really liked and I thought was very witchy was talk to us about Twilight Gardens.
Well, let me tell you about my first one, which kind of didn't work for me. And it's kind of an example of not paying attention to, the cycles and how the sun or even the moon. And that's this one. So for a twilight garden, it is nice, or like a moon garden where you have moon glow touching the garden, and you're using a white or light colored plants, and plants that attract night pollinators. And so my first one, it was when we first got our property. It was just bare land. We homesteaded, and I'm like, this is where my moon garden's going. This is it right here, without paying attention to where in the summer where the moon was. And
The
I even dug a crescent shaped pond, and I
Oh,
started
that's funny.
planting, and then summer comes and no moon. And I wasn't realizing that, when I did it, the moon was much higher. So in the summer, the moon kind of just rests down. It goes behind this bluff, then I see it, then it goes behind another bluff. So
That's
you have to
funny.
be in specific places. But I love Twilight Gardens because twilight is a very special time. It's a between time. And for me, it's a very
Right, it's a
magical.
liminal space for me.
Yes, definitely. And it's when you're going to plant plants that are have either white petals that reflect that, that light, and they glow. You can get plants whose leaves are either have some are variegated, or they have the fuzzy gray leaves like a lamb's ear or something, and plant those, and they're going to attract specific moths, and they release scent. Honeysuckles great at night too. You get the lighter ones because, that's when they really release their scent. And to me, they're just a wonderful place to be at night. It's a way of attracting a different set of pollinators, and they're just beautiful. I love them.
That's funny. You talk about fireflies, which is really big in our
Which I've
area.
never seen.
They're like thick at night. So
Wow.
talk about
Wow, you're
those.
lucky. I have had no, like, the only I wrote about them because I put them in the list of different for different regions. Personally, I have never seen one. My mom had she had traveled, my
Oh,
parents,
that's funny.
they took a picture and sent it to me and said, "Monica, you would love
That
this."
is so funny because my daughter lives in the Midwest on a lake, and they are like thick in the summer. The kids chase them, and yeah, they're just really, that's funny.
Yeah, I would love to experience that. That's kind of on my bucket list. So
Oh,
yeah.
that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really fun. So is there any hint about roses? I know we mentioned roses earlier. Are they hard to grow?
Yeah, for me, I think I
So
mentioned
that's
that in
what
the
I
book
thought.
too,
That's what
that
I'm like.
it's like,
Do they grow
well,
well in a pot?
oh, they do grow well in a pot. They do. For me, it's because I live in the Pacific Northwest, and I live in a specific microregion of the Pacific Northwest that is actually a temperate rainforest. Though I'm not in the temperate rainforest, that everyone knows about from the, the Hoh River Valley, or that I'm in another section, and roses don't like rain. So the roses I grow, I do have a couple of hybrids that I keep in pots because I have to move them. But I just grow varieties that are older varieties. I actually got them from cuttings from my grandmother's roses, and those grow wonderfully. I have a fairy rose that grows wonderfully. And those can be, I mean, if you grow in a region where you can grow roses that without chemicals or without a lot of fuss, and for me, that's a
Correct.
thing. Like, if I have to fuss with something too much, you're not going to be in my garden because I don't have time. So,
Right. Yeah,
you
I'm
know.
probably in the same boat. Your book also gave a lot of recipes and did a really good job with something that I have not do that you've kind of motivated me to do is you talk about herb mixtures for incense for burning,
Oh, yes. I
which
love
is
to
not
do that.
something I have ever done. So tell us about that process. And again,
Well,
you give recipes, and those are really common things that would
yeah.
be easy to do. And I don't know
Well,
that
I
people
was,
really do that very much.
no, I was trying to give some very common things that people could use
Right.
without like listing exotic, like you're gonna have to order this or whatever. I also have a strong belief in using what you have around you. So, like, for these loose incense that you just sprinkle on a charcoal tab in
Right.
a fire safe container, you're gonna use dried bark, resins. Herbs that you can also like add some cinnamon, some essential oils, you know, little things, and just
Peels. You do
spice them
orange
up.
peels, lime peels, which I had not thought of.
And they're super easy. They're super easy. You can just grind them up however you want, whether you have a mortar and pestle or you have an old coffee grinder. If you just want to break them up with your hands, it's super easy. We typically here every Yule. My coven and I gather, and we do that just for fun. I mean, we all bring things that we have grown and dried and have, and we have them set all over this table. We all bring our mortar and pestles and little baggies and little things, and they make great gifts for, you know, your
Yeah,
magically
that's
inclined.
fun.
So yeah, and so we're making blends, making up blends. I always bring out a list of blends. And then we have them for the year, and it's great. A lot of people like don't realize too that you can go out into your own region, and you don't have to order resin. Like, resin is out there, and all it is that sap that you see on the side of a tree that's been injured. Never injure a tree on purpose to create the
Right.
sap, but just, you know, find these, make a connection with the tree, of course. And then you're going to find the parts that are a little bit crusty and hard, not the fresh. If you want, you
Right.
can, then you have to dry it. It's a thing. And just pick them off, and that's your resin. And then you're going to use that. And so then you're not having to order frankincense or, you know, some of
Right.
these others more exotic, the dragon's blood or whatever. You can get pine, you can do fir. I found this summer a plum tree at my house. Or was that 2 summers ago? Anyway, that had beautiful sap, and it's adds a nice sweetness to my incense blends
Oh,
for
that's fun.
smells. I use bark, little cedar bark that I find, birch bark,
So, would you
whatever.
take the bark if you find a twig or on the ground, you can just peel the top layer of the bark off? Is that what you would do?
Yeah, that's what I would do. Yes. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, it's super simple. It's fun. And it's a way of getting to know your surroundings, which, you know, is great. And so then you're personalizing your magic. You're using the things from your region, which
Right.
I think is really important. And you're giving it a little more oomph, I believe. Adds a
Yeah.
little more power to your blend, because you're doing
Yeah.
all the work. You know, you've gathered it, you've
Right.
dried it, you've mixed it. All your intention goes into it.
What are some plants or herbs if someone is new practitioner and they want to grow a magical garden. What are like top three, or what do you suggest people start with?
I suggest if you're brand new, start with some simple herbs. Just you know, the
Like what?
basics, like rosemary, like thyme, like mint.
Mint grows well. I think it's hard not to grow mint.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, that one really makes you feel like I am a gardener because it grows
Yes.
anywhere. And yeah, if you're going to grow anything in the mint family, use a pot. Like I've said, I've learned that. Yeah, if you're going to do tomatoes, start with something small, like a nice little sun gold or something that's prolific and sweet and wonderful. Yeah, just start simple. Go with your interest. What is your magical and what are your intentions with your magic if you're going in that direction? As far as for food, what are you going to eat? What are you going to use? You know, you can get exotic and grow interesting things later. I always say start simply and you know just and you can enlarge your garden as you grow into a
Right.
garden.
I would suggest that. I remember many, many, many years ago just being excited about, living on my own and doing that and buying 10 herbs, and it was overwhelming and it was too
Yeah.
much. And now it's like do one, two, usually meet three is my max. Like, I
Yeah.
usually do several. I do several old favorites, and then every year
Yeah.
I try to incorporate something. So,
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Calendula is a really good one too. It's a pot marigold that you just sprinkle the seeds and it comes up and you have beautiful calendula that you can use and you know it's a nice fiery little sunny plant. It's edible and great and salves, healing salves and things like that. And one thing though that I think they're great. They're hydroponic gardens. They're these tiny little like you can if you have a small apartment or something, you can buy one for $30 and on Amazon or somewhere. And then a lot of them come with seed mixes or you can plant your own seeds in them. And they're self-contained. They have a little light. They're
Right.
run with all water and you can have herbs right there on your counter that you can, you know, use in cooking, use in magic, use in whatever. You can keep clipping and drying them, do whatever you want with them. They're wonderful. They're great for small spaces or beginner gardeners.
What are some what are some plants that are safe or not safe for animals like cats? I know cats tend to be some herbs and things that you can't grow near a cat.
Well, there's a lot of your house plants and things like that are not
Right.
safe to, you know, to keep them up.
Right.
I'll be honest with you, I don't have any problems with any of my animals, and I grow some pretty unsafe plants.
They naturally know to stay away.
I mean, I've raised goats, donkeys, animals. Some animals, you know, are going to go straight to the rhododendron or whatever, and maybe crunch on a leaf, but that's usually an anomaly. Most animals, at least I've found, and from other people that I know, pretty much know what to stay away from just instinctively.
That's
With my
interesting.
catnip, they also know what they like. And I've had many of those destroyed by cats. Just you go out there and they're gone because they've been rolling in them. So the catnip I have now, I have kind of tucked in an area where they're not at and I cage it. So yeah. But
That's
yeah, I
fine.
mean, I wouldn't be too afraid unless you have just, you know, your animal and then just do your research and, you know, but most plants are going to be fine. Like the
Yeah.
common everyday herbs that people are going to get. Yeah, there are a huge list of poisonous plants out there that you may or may not want to grow. And I suggest just
Being
saving
smart.
those for, you know, when you become a little more advanced in your gardening or and what's funny is a lot of the plants that are poisonous are just out in like in my area. Yeah. Like my cats and dogs are outside all the time. And when we take a walk, just some of the ones that grow native are not great for them, but yeah, they never eat those either. So yeah, I haven't
Good.
had a problem.
Good. Are you working on another book or any new projects coming up?
I've been working on some fiction lately because
Wow.
Yeah, I like storytelling is my first love. And I think that's reflected in my books because I tell a lot of stories about my family or myself, you know. So I'm working on some fiction that is for women of a certain age, so that I think we're underrepresented. So people over 50 need love stories, and I'm
There you
kind of
go.
tying them in with some folklore and fairy tales. One on kind of adding a little bit of a Robin Hoodie kind of vibe.
Oh, that's
Also one
fun.
with Tamlin, and then one that'll be related to Selkies. So I'm doing one for some people, woman featuring a woman in her 40s, then 50s and 60s. So yeah, that's what I've been
That's
doing.
fun.
Yeah,
That's fun.
yeah.
Now, is this brand new for you, or you haven't published a nonfiction book yet, have, or a fiction
I
book yet, have you?
haven't published one yet. So it's new for
That's
me, even though
fun.
story writing,
Is
it's
not.
not, that's not new to me, but I thought, you know what? I would like to do fiction. So, but I also have a couple more ideas that I'm going to be presenting to Llewellyn too, as far as some nonfiction stuff. So
Ooh,
hopefully in the next
that's
couple of years.
fun.
Yeah.
So, are your the women in your that your stories feature, are they will they be pagan?
There are pagan elements to all three of the stories. Are they? I'm going to say one of them is definitely pagan, but
That's
not, it's
interesting, though.
not. So pagan is part of who I am. So it's a
Yeah,
part of
no, I just
everything
find
I
it
write. You know
interesting
what I
'cause I
mean?
know paranormal, and I know that type of genre has really taken off in the last
Yes.
5 years, and people seek that out. So I was just wondering if it's because that's your background. So anyway, so that sounds so exciting.
So I'm excited. I'm having fun writing them. So yeah,
Well,
definitely.
that now are you how I find this so interesting because I've talked with authors who are like very disciplined and like I set myself a schedule. Then I've talked with other authors who said, when it comes, it comes. I may work up all night. Do you do an outline or how do you write?
Well, for the nonfiction, I definitely have to do an outline because if I don't keep myself to a schedule because I have a deadline, then it's not going to happen. Though I am like completely, I am ADHD, and so I'm, if I don't set these goals, I will procrastinate and then try to, you know,
Do it off last minute.
do it all in one. It doesn't always work out for me. But as far as fiction, I do it as it comes, and you'll see me up. I mean, you're at my house. I'll be up at 2 o'clock in the morning because the muses hit me, you know, writing away. But as far as nonfiction, I definitely have an outline, and then I kind of have a, I know how many pages roughly it's going to be, and so then I figure it out. I have this many months, or I have a year, exactly how much needs to be written every
Oh, that's
day.
really interesting.
Yeah, so I won't just be in the weeds. And so,
Yeah,
yeah.
just get behind. Oh,
Right, right.
that's really clever. So, if someone is interested in you, how do they get a hold of you? Are you
Well,
on
they,
Facebook or Instagram?
I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, but I'm not active on Facebook, but I do have an author page. But you can find me, I'm active on Instagram at Monica Crossan. And I'm active on TikTok at Witchy Writer One.
Oh,
So those are the
okay.
two social media platforms that I am definitely on quite often.
Witchy Writer One.
Yes, the numeral, just a one.
Oh, that's cool. Well, our time is up. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I loved your book. It was really, really good and got me excited about the spring and get going. So I hope it does really well. And
Well, thank you
please
so
come back
much.
anytime. In fact, please
Yes.
come back when you do your fiction
We would love
because that's
that.
not something we've talked a lot about, and that will be really fun to introduce my readers to your fiction.
Yes, I would love that. Definitely. And thanks for having me on.
You are so welcome. And remember, everyone, Monica's book is called A Year in the Enchanted Garden, and you can get it on Llewellyn.com, Amazon, and please look in your local or independent bookstore. And if they don't have it, ask for it so that they can get it there. Besides Monica, I want to thank Steve, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I want to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast or CSNP. Hades is one of the most recognizable yet misunderstood Greek gods. Join us on Circle Talk on March 19th as we explore through myth, storytelling, and practical exercises how Hades was more than just the keeper of souls in the land of the dead. Author Jamie Wagner will be discussing her new book, Hades: Myth, Magic, and Devotion, which will reveal his true nature and provide everything needed to create your own Hades devotional practice. I look forward to being with you again, so please come back. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow nature-centered paths. Join us throughout the week for various programming connecting with the community around the world. Please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Until next time, many blessings.